Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend. And tonight we've got a very special guest. We're going to talk about an awesome project and television show that he's got going on. And we'll get into some food sustainability, some wild food conversation, hunting, fishing, you know, the whole shebang, what we'd like to talk about. But first up, let me run through a bit of news myself. So it's been a couple weeks since we recorded, done a bit of elk scouting in the area. I'm headed up to actually this weekend with AJ, who's coming up from Texas. So excited for that. We're going to do a bit of elk archery, and then next weekend I'm headed down to southeast Colorado to do a bit of antelope hunting to kick off rifle season, and then following that I'm up in Wyoming. So kind of a lot of travel coming up in the next 3-4 weeks, which I'm excited about, because those that know me like know that I like to get out and get around. So very much like Mario here too, likes to travel and do the hunting thing too, so it's good. But well, let's see, outside from that, so we are working on the fall issue of the Harvesting Nature magazine, so that should be out here in October, putting the finishing touches on that. Really excited. We've got some small game recipes. We've got some antelope recipes, elk. We've got an elk feature story, some other cool things going on, how to butcher a whole goose, like tons and tons of cool things happening as always in the magazine. So if you haven't already, go subscribe to our electronic magazine, or there's still time to pick up our summer issue or spring issue in print on demand if you like. And then aside from that, we're in the final stages production of our small game blend for our spices and our waterfowl blend. So both those should be coming out here in the next few months. Pretty excited about those. As always, a small batch tested, we like to say chef tested, hunter approved for our spice blends. So definitely a fun testing phase on all various types of meat with that. So look for those. And then also, too, we have a Facebook community page some of you may not know about. It's called Eat More Wild Game. If you go there, that's our page. You can check us out and interact with the majority of our crew there. We're on there chatting, answering questions, asking questions, sharing cool things. But it's a more intimate way to hang out and chat. So, but aside from that, I think that's all I got for updates for me. So I'll go ahead and introduce our guest. Our guest today is the owner and executive producer of Man Eats Wild television series, airing on the Outdoor Channel, where season 2 just premiered. Congrats on that. He has owned global award-winning restaurants and has over 25 years of outdoor adventure experience. He's been all around the world harvesting food in the most extreme environments, and I'm really excited to chat with him tonight. So please welcome Mario Calpo to the Wild Fish and Game Podcast. Welcome, Mario.
Hey, Justin. How are you, mate?
Good, man. It's good to have you on.
It's a pleasure. I'm really excited. I've been excited to to get on this podcast all week, actually. So we're finally here.
That's good.
Nice.
It's a, you know, as a chef as well, it's always good when you can find the intersection of hunting and cooking and just get to talk about both with someone who's also equally passionate about it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's our lives, right?
Yep. So if you could you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and how you got into the outdoors?
Sure, man. You know, I'm 38. I feel like I'm about 58 because I'm always outside and my body's hurting. But I'm 38 years old. I'm an ex-restaurateur. I say ex because I gave up the restaurant game probably about 10 years ago, where, you know, the outdoor lifestyle and wild game and TV series took over. But I also used to be a professional hunting guide and had a lodge in New Zealand where I would take, you know, all sorts of people from around the world out on expeditions, hunting small game, large game, you know, waterfowl, everything really. And then after that, that's when the show sort of came about. But it's really Man Eats Wild as my show is really a combination of all the unique skill sets that I've sort of got over the years through the restaurants and the guiding business. And it was just like a way of showing what I love doing to a lot of people. And I'm absolutely loving the journey. I now live in America. As you can hear, I've got an Australian accent. So I'm originally from Australia. And now I live in the States and I'm loving it. I love America and I love how passionate you guys are about the outdoors, and your respect for nature and conservation is second to none. So it was really an easy fit for me to settle right in here.
Nice. And so what was it like growing up sort of hunting and fishing in Australia?
Yeah, it's a little bit different because, you know, there's a lot of things that can kill you in Australia. It's pretty like, you know, even a little spider you got to worry about. So I could say it's a little bit more relaxed here. At least you know here what's going to try to kill you. It's normally big and has big teeth. But the things over there can be really tiny and unassuming. But, it's definitely different. Like we don't, you know, we have all sorts of crazy things to hunt. We've actually got some really cool deer species, quite a big variety of deer species, some tropical sort of jungle deer. And then we've also got, you know, your typical high mountain sort of stuff. And then, of course, you know, we have all the crazy things like humongous sharks and crocodiles and things like that. But yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm lucky because I get to travel the whole world. So I really do get to try everything as far as food and harvesting.
That's awesome. So I saw too on the preview of your show that you do a bit of spearfishing. Did you do that growing up or something you got into later?
I'm not going to say I'm the best spear fisherman, but I definitely love it. So if that counts for anything, I'm really good. But I've done a bit. Like I've shot some pretty decent sized pelagic species, and you know, I've had a few close calls with sharks and stuff like that. So I'm not 100% comfortable in the water, but I just do it. It's one of those,
I feel
things,
you.
You know what I mean? Like you just go, stop being a little wuss and get in that water. But then, you know, sometimes it's, you kind of feel like you're out of your depth. Excuse the pun.
Yeah. It's a mental game. You know, I've done it a bit too, in my life, and it's like, jumping in the water, you're in a whole new environment. Like you're not the apex predator anymore. You're kind of like, you know, you're still top of the food chain, but not the top. That's
yeah,
for sure.
You definitely go down a few levels. Like I mean, yeah, we're just not, humans are so uncoordinated in water. We're not meant to be there. You know what I mean? We're not built for that. Like putting a fish on land, basically. It's just useless.
Yeah. But so you talked about restaurants. What kind of restaurants have you had throughout your time?
Yeah, I ran quite a few restaurants as a young man in my early 20s, and opened a few up as well. My most famous one was called the Old Library at a really famous chef, Italian celebrity chef there named Danny Russo. Big shout out to Danny. And, you know, we had a very good, 8-year run at that restaurant, and it was extremely busy, and we were lucky enough to really create some magic as far as food was concerned, and won a whole bunch of awards. So I don't know if anyone's been in the restaurant game. It's not easy, man. It takes mm-hmm. a few years off your life, because it's very stressful and a lot of hard work. But if you're passionate about food, I mean, it's the ultimate place to experiment and play with different ingredients.
Yeah, for sure. And sort of being owner operator and having a good chef, you get a good variety of ingredients and experiences to go into the food as well. And that's always awesome when you create something really great.
For sure. I mean, you know what I do love now, though, that I've never really been able to do in Australia anyway, and I'm pretty sure the US is the same, but I can now play around with wild game, or I have been for a long mm-hmm. time, but now, on TV, I can create recipes. You can't do that in Australia. You can't put wild food in a restaurant. It's got to be certified and butchered and put through an abattoir through a series of, stricter protocols. So, I guess that was always something that was really frustrating for me. But now, I can cook whatever I want from the wild on TV. So that's really been a great change of pace.
No, that's awesome. And you're spot on with that. Same way here in the States, like everything's got to go through either the state inspectors or the U.S. Department of Agriculture, before you can get it out to the restaurants. And, it's cool because too, like, I always find it that to be the ultimate connection. I grew up hunting and then got into the kitchen in college age, but it's still like going back to my roots and kind of being like, this is the origin of this food. This is where it came from. Like, I think as a chef, it's always something I really, really appreciated, as I moved more into the wild food realm and left the restaurant world. And just like, I'm like you, I'm not on TV, but I, get to cook and travel and do all the cool stuff too.
Awesome.
And I love pulling it all together and then pulling the ingredients and from local spots. And it's so much fun to have that creativity. Really from your own hands.
For sure. And it's so much more satisfying. Like, anyone can go into a supermarket and pick some ingredients. Like, that's, I'm not talking down onto that, because sometimes I have to do that. But, there is something really special about going out with nothing and coming back with a complete grocery list of, things that you then cook and share with people that you love. And then, a bonus is when you nail it and it's really delicious. It's like the ultimate way to share your hard effort.
I think it's you mentioned going out kind of in the wild with nothing and coming back, and immediately like what popped in my head is like, you think about historic hunters going out with like nothing and being like, I'm going to live off the land while I'm out here hunting, or I'm just going to go out and catch some fish or, forage. And I'm just like, holy smokes. Now we go out with our freeze dried meals and our canned tuna or whatever. And, it's definitely been an evolution in the hunting world as well.
Oh, for sure. I've always wondered, like, I can't say I've ever done this. I can honestly say that I have never done this, actually. But I would love to actually test myself like that one day and go, okay, here's the deal. You're going to go out only with your bow, your knife, and your essential survival stuff, and see how long you can go for with just being able to, harvest. Like, I really would love to just, even if it's for like 3 weeks or something, and just go out with nothing and see if, like, I'm sure.
You said 3 weeks. I was like, maybe like 4 days.
I think like a month or something. But yeah, it'd be a pretty cool experience. Hey, maybe we can make a show like that.
There you go. Yeah. It'd be like some of those survival shows, but like for real, and we'd be hunting. I don't think it'd even have a hunting aspect of it as much.
No, those guys go out naked with like nothing, and then they come back with about 50 pounds lighter and, looking homeless.
I draw the line there. I'm taking my clothes, Mario.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you, man. I wouldn't be very good for TV.
People be like, I'm just gonna turn this off.
Yeah. Get the kids inside.
Yeah. So, oh, that's awesome. So, one question that I do like to ask, and I ask this on behalf of Corey, our podcast producer, because it's like one of his favorite questions to ask is. Mm-hmm. What's something like really cool, really special that you have in your freezer right now that you're looking forward to cooking up soon?
Man, you've asked I think I told you earlier, I'm moving.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I have nothing in my freezer right this second, but I'm hoping that in a few days from now, cause I'm actually about to leave on an elk hunt tomorrow, that I'm going to have a whole elk in my fridge. So that could be, there's nothing better than venison. That's pretty much a staple diet of all hunters. I'm actually a huge fan of cooking seafood though. And I will answer your question because I just moved from New Zealand. So I'm going to take a little snapshot of what was in that freezer and I'll, you know, so I used to love, one of my favorite things to do is catching rock lobsters. Just because it's so much fun and, you know, I love the fact that you can catch something from the wild that in a restaurant that I sometimes go into with my friends is like $200 for a serving. And I've got like 15 of them in my freezer ready to go. So
ooh, yes,
I love that. That to me is like seeing the price tag on something that is available to anyone that's got the skill set or, you know, loves doing it is, yeah, I think that's special, man.
So moving down, you're moving down south, down to, is it okay if I say where? Cause I'm going to give you some.
Go for it, man. Yeah. Just don't give my exact address away.
No. So moving down to Florida, and I told you earlier, like I used to live in the Florida Keys, and you'll appreciate it. So Florida Keys, if you don't know, has a big lobster season.
I've been there. I've harvested lobster.
Yeah. Oh man, they're so good. I do like the cold water, like Maine lobsters better, but I'm of the exact same mindset as you is like when I can go across the street, jump in the water, dive, get a fresh lobster out, like that's basically, you know, what's it cost for a tag? Like $20 maybe. And you can take six per day, you know, versus going to a restaurant and paying like upwards of $100 or more for a lobster. Like what that's just awesome. That's awesome.
Absolutely. I just want to ask you something. Like, so I went, this is really interesting for me anyway. So you said you prefer the Maine lobsters over those, because what are those? I went on a fishing trip down there and I had this really cool guy, became friends with named Dan, and he took me spearfishing and I found lobsters under the rocks and they were like this bluey green kind of rock lobsters looking things, like I don't know what the species are called, but they're very,
so there's Florida spiny lobsters or Caribbean spiny lobsters is what they are,
right? They're kind of green, right? Like bluey.
They have kind of a reddish purple bluish hue purple to them.
Yeah that's the ones. I reckon they're more I found them delicious, man. Like I was really impressed by the flavors of really sweet, beautiful flesh, not very big though. I mean, the ones I got were like half a pound or something. I don't know, a pound maybe. A pound maybe, I don't know. But you know, they're kind of like 12, 14 inches long, and they were so tasty. Oh my god, we ate like, I ate like four of them. I was like, man, these are great.
So I do like them. I love the flavor. I do think that they're like chewier. Yeah. Than the like the cold water lobsters up in like Maine. I think they're more like, I guess you wouldn't say like supple, but you bite into them and they just kind of give and they're like really like a tender steak, whereas spiny lobsters are a little more chewy in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've only had the Maine lobsters a couple of times. They're a different thing altogether, right? They've got actually claws, right?
Cool. And that's I wouldn't think to dive for Maine lobsters. First off, the water is pretty cold, and second, I don't know, they'd probably pinch my finger off if that's possible.
Yeah, we'd freeze our asses off. You wouldn't get many out, man. You'd probably get one out. And be, all right, I'm done, guys.
Yep. Yeah. I need a heater. But so let's talk a little bit about your show. Sure. So for those that may have never seen it, kind of what's the concept of the show? Like, start from the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, well, my show is all about harvesting food from the wild and reconnecting people to where their food comes from. Because I strongly believe, Justin, that as a society, we have become completely disconnected from our food. People have no idea what they're eating, nor do they know where it comes from. And I really had this strong urge, especially after being a restaurateur and especially after being a guide, to reestablishing that connection and you know, reconnecting people to where their food comes from. So essentially what I do is I go and travel all around the world, and I harvest food from the wild and cook amazing, well, at least I think they're amazing, cooking segments. So I, you know, and I also in the process, you know, showcase different cultures and different cuisines all around the world. And a lot of the time it's new to me. Like it's, you know, for example, like I was just in Africa and I went there and learned a whole bunch of new recipes and different ingredients that obviously you can't get in America. And so, you know, a lot of the time it's actually a learning sort of experience for me as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I'm looking here on the Man Eats Wild's main page on Outdoor Channel, and you got you sitting atop. So is that an alligator or a crocodile?
I think if it's
you're like holding its mouth.
Yeah, that's a really big crocodile. That was a really cool episode. I got a phone call from a friend of mine who lived in Zimbabwe, and they had a lot of people being taken by these animals and a lot of people dying. Like, it was really sad. Young kids just going to basically, like, get their drinking water for the day and, you know, cattle and stuff like that. And he sort of said, listen, man, I know you got your show, but I really want to show how bad these things are, like how much of a problem they are in these areas. So we came up with this idea to go and get rid of this really these couple of problematic crocodiles, but also teach the locals how to cook them and you know.
Oh, nice.
So we're kind of it's a win-win. You're reducing the numbers of something that's out of control now and problematic, and also we're teaching these people that, hey, this is actually a valuable source of protein, because no one wants to kill something for no reason. So, you know, I'm not into that at all. So, I kind of thought it could be a cool episode, and it really was. So that crocodile was one of those big, big, badass, problematic ones that we got rid of.
So how did you guys teach them to cook it? Or has this episode aired yet? I'm not giving away a spoiler, am I?
No, it aired yesterday, which was the first time.
Oh, perfect.
And yeah. So, I mean, it's airing all week. We have multiple, the show plays, I think, quite a few times in a week. But I'm sure I can give it away. I don't know when this podcast comes out, but I'll tell you anyway.
Probably won't be till next week or the following, so.
Okay, well, then we're good. But, yeah, so basically harvested a huge croc. It was like 13 foot or something like that. And the tail to me is probably the best part of the animal. I did a Southeast Asian inspired wok stir fry out of it. You know, used some beautiful Asian sort of sauces and marinades, had chili in there and cumin and, you know, rice wine vinegar, soy sauce, seasoned the hell out of it and gave it a stir fry sort of flavor with sesame oil and a really hot wok, and just cooked it over flame. It was really tasty. It was pretty spicy, but the Africans were like, whoa. we've never really, I know I thought like African food was, spicy.
But yeah, spicy. Right? I guess it depends on where you're at. Yeah, yeah.
Well, in Zimbabwe, it's not, because I almost like their mouths almost like hit the top of their heads, man. Yeah.
That's awesome. I went out, what was it, two years ago, 2020, I drew alligator tags down in Florida and went out and had a pretty rough week and ended up coming up without any alligator. And then one of my good buddies, Adam Steele, he helps out with some of our butchering camps and stuff like that. But he runs like a processing place, just north of Orlando, and he had some alligator meat and basically gave me like a sympathy package of alligator meat. And I brought it back and cooked it up. And I don't know the nuanced differences between crocodile and alligator, but I made a pretty delicious like paella with it.
Nice.
Which came out really well. And I took some Key West pink shrimp and tried to go as Florida as I could, just
yeah,
like using all that hub of ingredients. But man, it's such a good meat. And I think, I think it's something people will get a little intimidated by. And I don't think that they should.
No, not at all. It's delicious, man. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. It's a very, I mean, people eat chicken all the time, right? And it's mm-hmm. no stronger, in my opinion. And I hate to be the cliche guy comparing to chicken, but it's something that people know. So it's kind of like you kind of get caught in that. But it really is not, it's not gamey. I think texturally, it's, if you cook it right, it's reasonably tender. It's not super tough. I think there's a lot you can do with it. I mean, the southern states, they love it down there, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's a big thing. Like, I went to college in Louisiana, and fried alligator tails like everywhere. But even once you start to sort of like scope beyond that, like even, it's like chicken. It's got dark meat, it's got light meat, and like even the dark meat's good. You have to use it prepare it a little different, just like you would anything else. But
yeah,
man, it's a fun food for sure.
Oh, for sure, man. I mean, I love it. I did learn something that was very interesting. I'm going to tell everyone, not just in case they have any ideas, but a crocodile's liver, if consumed, can be deadly. And
yeah.
And if you dry it out and eat it, it's extremely deadly. Like I'm talking.
Really?
Yeah, man. I'm talking like a pinch of salt. That would kill 10 men. It's that strong.
What?
Yeah. Because when we were there, I killed this big crocodile, and this guy came out of nowhere, like this like ranger or something. And we obviously had permits and we went through the whole, it was all legal. But this guy came out and he's like, you have to, I'm the officer of this area. We heard you, trying to hunt crocodile. And we were forced to disregard the liver because locals that had like issues with each other were known to mm-hmm. like poison each other and it was a thing. Like, Like they were really strict about it.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah.
Are you reading on it now?
Yeah, I was just, I'm huh.
I don't want to give anyone any ideas out there.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, just from a safety perspective, I mean, like a lot of people like liver, like it's an offal. It's an internal part that people like to eat. So just, I think it's got something to do with the amount of like stuff they eat. There's like some kind of I don't know exactly, so I don't want to be quoted on it, but there's a chemical that builds up over time and become so potent in specifically, crocodiles that it's highly toxic and deadly.
Huh. Yeah, I was looking at some crocodile bile. I don't know. Well, I'm going to have to dig into this more. I'm curious now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was told by the locals. So unless they were making a big joke about it and I was the fool. But I'm pretty sure that they were legit.
No, I'm curious now. That's interesting. Yeah. Either way, like either way, if it's not and people fully believe it, or you know, whatever, either way, it's like, wow, that's a pretty cool piece of culture.
Yeah.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So what are some other places that you visited that you really enjoyed?
On that trip, I was lucky enough to go to Namibia, and I hunted in like the Namibian desert, which was really cool, and which I had really hard access. So I actually got a hot air balloon and got dropped off in the middle of the Namib desert to hunt oryx. That was seriously cool. You know, did some stuff in the Seychelles, which was amazing. Anyone out there that loves fly fishing or saltwater fly fishing, I can highly recommend the Seychelles, particularly a place called Alphonse Island.
Where's that at?
It's in the Seychelles. So it's off the coast of South Africa.
Okay, about got it.
Three-hour flight off the coast of South Africa, in the middle of the Indian Ocean. It's a tiny little dot. It's really seriously small. But it has, like, you could be the worst fisherman on the planet. In fact, you could not even fish before, and you're going to catch like crazy fish. Like, it's that, the ecosystem is just thriving there, man. It's really untouched. So yeah, I was lucky enough to catch sailfish on a fly rod. I caught like a 4-foot giant trevally, permit, milkfish, bonefish. I caught this humongous ruby snapper, which probably was, I'm going to say it was the best eating fish I've ever had in my life.
Ooh.
Yeah. Atlas fish, they call them, but I think the technical name is ruby snapper.
You're looking it up. I'm super curious. Sorry, I like Google everything as we're talking about it. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it looks like a gigantic. See if I got a photo I can show you here. It looks like a gigantic goldfish. Like, you know those goldfish that you have in the
thing? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you see it?
I see. Oh, those are cool.
Really good.
I like all the different snapper varieties. Like, they generally, like, that meat quality of fish is just phenomenal.
Yeah, you see that?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a nice size one, too.
Yeah, it was probably about 45 pounds, 50 pounds.
That's good. That's a good bit of meat.
Yeah, oh, man, it was delicious. Like, it was beautiful, flaky, soft flesh, and it absorbed every bit of flavor that I put on it, man. It was just like, and succulent, like just juicy, you know, not too mm-hmm. oily, skin crisped up really nicely. Just, yeah, it was gold.
Ooh, that's awesome. So on the show too, I'm gonna bring us back around, because I want to hit on like your four sort of tenets here. Yeah. I guess so in those, you know, through our conversation, I've learned resonate pretty personally with you is kind of like a good personal motivator for why you're a hunter and angler, is obviously the food side of it, the sustainability. So sustainability, learning different cultures, cuisines, understanding where your food comes from, and sort of the health benefits. Was that sort of a natural thing for you to shape it that way, or was it something that you're like, ah, let's lean a little bit into it? I want to combine several passions, or
yeah, it was kind of like, it's just the truth, you know, like that's all it is really. And that's all I want to tell people. Like, this is not my perception, or, you know, I'm not beating a drum that's like, hey, this is what I think. This is like factual stuff, right?
Yeah.
We're not, you know, and I feel like as consumers of food, people have been misled, like badly, right? Because it's like pharmaceutical companies. It's the same crap. Like, you know, they give you this drug, then you get another symptom from it, then you've got to take another drug. And really, you could, like in most cases, actually not even get the illness if you ate right to start with or looked after yourself. So this is really me just trying to say, hey, guys, you know, if you just think about what you're putting in your body and you look into this a little bit, you'll actually find out that organic and wild, which is probably the best, but, you know, natural food in general is going to make you live longer. You are going to feel better. You know what I mean? Like it's not, yeah. So that was something that I learned from a combination of obviously harvesting food myself, but also the restaurants and just the world in general. Like you look at, man, I got to say, like America was a big shock to me when I first got here. You know, 40% of Americans are obese, you know, and 40 million people have diabetes. That's not a genetic thing. This is directly related to the food we're eating. So, I mean, it doesn't matter how you look at it. We never used to eat that way. We used to eat naturally. We were hunting gatherers, right? And I'm not like, you know, paying out on people, but it's just like the fact. So I think if we can spread a message of, you know, helping people choose the right food, inspiring people to get out there every once in a while and harvest your own food and get outside, I think it's a great message, man. I think it's really positive.
No, I agree with you, and I appreciate the authenticity that you bring to it as well. It's like, hey, this is me. This is what I do. But also, like, I agree with you 100%, and I think that's been a big mission for us from the beginning is, like, that education and inspiration piece. Like, let's teach people how to take something they get from the wild and turn it into food so that they create a passion for it, and then in turn, you know, hunting and fishing and foraging and the other outdoor activities, like those are active things. Like those are things our body is designed to do, is to go out there and acquire things. And so when you're doing that, you're like, oh, well, I want to be a better hunter. Maybe I need to go a little further into the woods. Maybe I need to hike up that mountain. Maybe I need to go find that remote stream and harvest the fish. Like, you know, I think I agree with you. That's the positivity in it, is like, it's twofold. People eat good food and people do good things with their bodies.
Like, yeah. That's it, man. That's you can't put it any simpler or direct. Like that's exactly what we are meant to be doing as humans.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. And it's, you know what the other thing I'll say as well is, people don't think, oh, well, like, I can't go to the supermarket. Like, I can't go out hunting every day to get food. But what they don't actually, like, what's really, like, one thing I find, I just feel like, you know, saying to people, hey, man, you don't get it. Like, one elk, one deer is so much food. Like, you couldn't eat that by yourself in 6 months. Like, it'd take months to eat a whole beast. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, you don't even have to, like, let's just say you shot one or two pigs, a deer, and went fishing, you know, half a dozen times, like, you know, relatively decent sized fish. That would be enough food probably to feed you for like 6 months, maybe more. You know what I mean? So, and then, you know, say you had a veggie patch at home, or you found a good organic, you know, farmer's market in your house. That's it. You're good to go. And like, that would be enough. With you supplement with supermarket food as well a little bit, because I know, you know, it's hard to be out there all the time, but that would severely increase your health and you know, make you live a much cleaner lifestyle.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. And I think back in, what was it, 2011, I did a little bit of a cost analysis on like the hunting versus buying food. And this has been a very like controversial article for us like over the past decade, which is fine. But I like the conversation that it drives. Mm. And there's some questionable analytics on my part. But, you know, because obviously if you're going to get into hunting, you have to spend, you know, you have to spend a good amount, yeah, right, yeah, to get into it. So if you take that factor out and you look at like, you know, pound for pound, like the cost of a tag versus the cost of buying meat in the store, like it even outweighs it. So like from an economic standpoint, like there's benefits to it as well. But no, I agree with you. And I think too, you know, I mention it frequently here. First off, like one, eat what makes you happy. Hopefully that's wild game and wild food. But two, like it's okay to supplement, you know, wild food with domestic or homegrown or whatever. But it's like try to know the farmer, know the source, like learn more about your local food system versus just like buying mass produced food, which is not great.
I totally agree with you, Justin. I had this theory. Well, it's not a theory, but it's pretty much factual. Like, if we all ate within 100 miles of our house, we would abolish a lot of world problems, a lot. You know, we would really make a huge dent in the carbon footprint of transportation of food. And, you know, like, it's crazy. Like, when I realized, when I lived in New Zealand, this is when I really realized it. A friend of mine was a fishmonger, right? And he had commercial fishing boats. And, you know, we used to wonder why we could never find the fish that he was catching in the shops. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, why can't we buy yellowtail kingfish, right? What you guys call amberjack, which like there's heaps of them and, you know, they're abundant. And he's like, oh no, they all get shipped to China. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, yeah. And so do all our lobsters and our crayfish and our abalone. Yeah. And that's like, I find that not that I have anything, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not having a go at China specifically. It happens all over the world, but this is just an example. And, you know, what I was, you know, gobsmacked by that is that we're literally raping the earth in one area, like huge fishery. You know, there's 2 billion people in China and a tiny little country like New Zealand, and it's just getting smashed. And longliners and all this other stuff, and all this stuff's going across the other side of the world. So, you know, I mean, how long can we sustain that for as a planet? You've got 7 billion people. Like, you know, it's not a factory that just keeps pumping out products. This is Mother Nature, man. So eventually it's going to get to a point where, you know, I think it's already getting to that point. So that's another really valuable message to get across to people is, you know, we should be trying to look at locally sourcing all our food and especially organic matter.
And I think too, looking at it from a seasonal standpoint as well, and I think that plays into that 100-mile radius too, is like you can't grow everything all year, right? So sometimes it's like, all right, well, you know, maybe I'll do without apples because my apples aren't fresh. Maybe I'll do without tomatoes because tomatoes aren't fresh. Or maybe I'll eat canned tomatoes that, you know, I made in the summer. Like there's definitely, you know, I give a lot of respect to folks that lived before we had like a mass food system because you had to have a little bit of forethought, right? You had to think about it like, all right, we're going to harvest our garden this month and everything that we don't eat in the next week's got to get canned and that's going to take us another 2 weeks. Like, yeah, you're right.
Totally. Yeah, I used to it's funny, like you make a really valid point, man, and I'm glad you actually said that because it's true. You know, I'm always wary of seeing like summer fruits in December. I'm like, why is there figs and like nectarines and peaches like in the supermarket right now when it's like the dead of winter and these things shouldn't be growing right now? And it's like they're all gas frozen and snap frozen and whatever else. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're actually pumped full of chemicals, man. That's what keeps them fresh to get from one side of the world to the other. But with our restaurants, we've said it from day one, and we lived by the sword, man. We said all our menu is seasonal, all our menu is local, right? And you know, with the exception of maybe one or two specials, but for the most part, we really did live by it. And and like you said, it's like fresh, because you know, it's like this is what is meant to be happening right now.
Yeah, and I think I give a testament. So if you're ever down in Austin, or maybe you've been down there, Jesse Griffiths has a restaurant down there, Daidue Supper Club, and he does every ingredient in his restaurant is from Texas, which is
awesome.
Yeah, it's super cool. Super. And I love that model. You know, one day if I grow up and find my calling again to go back in the restaurants, I think that's probably a model I would follow, is like, all right, we're going to do everything from, you know, Colorado or Florida, or we're like, what, there's so much opportunity, but it forces you to cook to your locale, which I think is great. And
that's cool. I like that as a concept for a restaurant. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but that could be a really cool, you know, maybe call a restaurant locally grown. That restaurant is just, no matter where you see that restaurant, you know the menu is from the local state.
Yeah, yeah. I think you get a good following of folks. A lot of people respect that for sure. But let's circle back around to so as you're out traveling and hunting and you're interacting with other cultures, what are some cool culinary or food techniques or traditions that you've picked up along the way that you?
Well, it's sometimes not actually the food, even just small things like the way they butcher or carry an animal out, or, you know, things like that. Like, you know, I learned from the Maoris. Do you know what the Maoris?
Mm-hmm.
The New Zealand natives.
I do. I've got some really good friends that are Maoris that I played rugby with.
Really? Yeah. You played rugby?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I've been going strong for, since 13 years now.
Wow, man. You must be a strong man. Because rugby, buddy, it makes you tough. You don't have a choice.
No, you don't. You're either tough or broken.
Yeah, exactly. Or both.
I think that's me.
yes, and they're big guys, man. Those boys are some of the biggest human beings I mean, all South Pacific Islanders are normally, they're not exactly small people, but I went hunting, a lot of hunting with Maori boys in New Zealand when I lived over there, and they taught me, you know, methods of, this is not really cooking, but it's more just, you know, the whole cultural thing and how different people around the world do things differently. And that's really how I learn a lot of what I know, is that I pick up all these great little things that I see. And, you know, I can either dismiss them or use them. And you know, sometimes I feel like they're things that I'm like, why would you do it that way? But a lot of other times it's like, wow, that was really cool. So, yeah, so what they do is they I don't know if you know this, but they'll cut the joint at the forequarter. So where the shank meets the hinge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll do that on both sides. And they'll leave the ligament dangling, right? So it's just sort of dangling. Then they'll cut another hole in the Achilles part of the back legs, the bit that where the hoof joins the leg. There's like a little gap in the middle, and they thread this into the back leg, so it makes a backpack out of the animal, and you can literally slide it on your back like an actual backpack. It's so comfortable. I've carried out like animals almost the size of a bull elk out like that. But if you can do it properly, like, I mean, maybe not that big, but not far off it, man. Like it's pretty handy, you know? And the reason why they do it is because sometimes, you know, in New Zealand, it's such high altitude and it's really steep sort of settings. It's hard to butcher up sometimes because, you know, there's, you know, steep sort of surfaces. So, yeah, I just thought that was amazing. And, you know, in Africa, like the way they, you know, I learned how to do an underground food oven under the ground. And, I mean, it's not exactly the most efficient way to cook something. It takes a long time. But, hey, if you want to do a roast and you don't have an oven, well, there you go. There's a way of doing dig it. You know, like, yeah, dig a hole, get some rocks that cover the ground in rocks, make a huge fire on it, and cover it up with some leafage, and you know that you've got an oven, like essentially, you know, not as powerful, but after 3-4 hours, you get the job done.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just talking about this last episode. I think we were talking about roasting whole animals in pits. And I was like, I've always wanted to do it, but I've never found anybody who would let me dig a hole in their yard and start a fire in it. So I'm going to keep working on it. I'll get it one day.
Yeah. Well, it may be in the wild somewhere, but just don't start a fire in the national park.
No. Especially this time of year. Jeez, it's so dry.
Yeah, totally. But, yeah, so there's a lot of interesting things around the world, I suppose. It's always fascinating to me.
Yeah. No, it's good. I think it's awesome you're getting to travel and experience those things like that, and that you're willing to share those experiences. I think it's good. You know, there's definitely a lot of folks, me included, who can't always travel around, and it's cool to highlight those and you know, share those experiences also too. And I appreciate it too that you approach it from the culinary standpoint of like, hey, we're going to go and instead of just hunting or fishing or doing whatever, which some folks do, you know, whatever, do their thing. But like, you're really like, hey, let's do the food part too. Like, let's stick to that tradition, which I think that's more valuable to me, in my opinion.
Absolutely, man. And you can do both. Like, that's the thing. Like, the, you know, like, I know, like, trophy hunting, for example, is, you know, in the mainstream is really looked down on, or, you know, they don't get it. And it kind of has had a rough, you know, in the media, it's been pretty hardcore. But, you know, and people say to me sometimes, like, because obviously I am all about harvesting food. It's food is why I do what I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally, or not, like sometimes if I shoot a really impressive animal, for example, and I will take the head with me and I'll mount it, right? Or I'll keep the rug. And people are like, well, why do you do that? Like, why do you do that if you're just, you know, doing it about for food? And I'm like, why wouldn't I do that? Like, the other option is leaving it in the ground to rot away and be completely wasted. Yeah. Or I take it and I have a memory for the rest of my life, and I've utilized that animal for food like we would if we went and bought cow beef in the butcher, right? So it's just a memory. Like, it's just a way of capturing a moment and remembering, you know, how that particular harvest went down. So I still think you can go out and have fun harvesting and doing your thing and utilize the animal that you've taken 100% for food.
No, I'm with you on that. And like, I'm totally, I think I sort of, I'm 100% okay with the way you do it. I mean, it's the same way with me. Like, if you look behind me, look,
yeah, there's my
antelope. Yeah. So, you know, I definitely do that, but it's too, it's like the value is the food. Like, I wanted to do both. I'd never shot an antelope buck before, but I also love antelope meat. Like, that's one of my favorite meats. So yeah, of course that guy is gonna, you know, he's gonna get eaten, but it's also too, it's like, I'm super proud of that, and it lets me show my kids and my family and like, hey, check out this, and like, let me tell you about how antelope is. And you know, it's a conversation point and an education point is too. But I think the reverse side of it is just, you know, people talk about hunting for horns or all that, like, where does it go? I think, where does the meat go? What's the purpose? But I don't want to dive too far down that
rabbit hole.
But yeah.
It's a big one, man.
It is, yeah. I'm like you. I live in the world of food, so that's where I want to be, and that's my choice. So I think I'll go there. But yeah. So as we kind of wind down a little bit on time, I did want to, if you want to give any highlights from season 2, you know, any previews without giving away too much. I know we talked about your first episode that aired, but
there's some good ones there, man. Yeah, I honestly, they are all really good. I'm not just saying that because it's my show. This particular season I found myself to be really lucky in the fact that amazing things happened to me while I was out in the wilderness. I lived with the Bushman people in the Kalahari Desert, and I was able to harvest food for the whole village and lived closely with them. That was really special. Whitewater rafted down some crocodile-infested waters to get to this this crocodile hunt. That was really intense. You know, did the balloon in the middle, got an air balloon in the middle of the Namibian desert and harvested an oryx. I was the first guy in this particular area to shoot a Cape buffalo with my bow. No one had ever shot one in this area. Yeah, so I didn't know that until after. The guy's like, just by the way, you're the first person to ever do this here. I was like, oh, why? If you had told me that, I probably wouldn't have tried it. But, yeah, there was some great adventures. I also was lucky enough to take some really cool people out. Chuck Liddell, UFC champion, and, you know, he came out on an adventure with me. We filmed an episode with him. Frank Stallone, Sylvester Stallone's brother and actor, big actor himself. I did a turkey hunt with him in Kansas. That was cool. And then, of course, I did a really cool axis deer harvest with Shane Dorian, who's a big wave surfer. And he's like,
yeah,
he's huge, man. Like, the guy's crazy. Surfs 60-foot waves and jaws, and he's best friends with Kelly Slater. And he's a badass bow hunter too. Like, we did really well together. And that's actually who I'm hunting with tomorrow. Me and him are going out.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot. Oh, the other one is I caught like a 600-700-pound bluefin tuna in a spot called Prince Edward Island, and then did some nice food out of that. So yeah, it's action packed, man. Like, the show is all action. It's not like your normal sort of, you know, cruisy hunts. It's death-defying, action-packed, you know, extreme sort of deal. And that's what we wanted to keep it like, so we can add some fun and adventure into sometimes something that can be looked upon as not so exciting.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I'm looking at some of the previews and the photos on Outdoor Channel website here. So that's awesome. And two, it's airing, like you mentioned earlier, I've got it. It's like, it's airing Saturday, Monday, multiple times on Monday, multiple times on Tuesday. Like, I think folks out there shouldn't miss it. Check it out. Yes, for sure.
And also, can I give my plug? My Instagram is Man Eats Wild TV. We welcome anyone following us, and we really hope that you can, you know, follow my adventures on the gram, because I know that's how people get a lot of their news these days.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was actually going to ask you what your Instagram was, so that's perfect.
Yeah, it's Man Eats Wild TV, I think our Facebook is just Man Eats Wild, but that's where you can get all the up-to-date stuff that we're doing, and there's great recipes on our website, and yeah, it's been a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing more of your adventures and hearing more about them as well. So, I appreciate you coming on the show. So as we sort of wind down, this is kind of the last moment where, I like to offer up if you got a last thought or a idea or question or concept you want to share with the guest, you know, the floor is yours. If not,
yeah, no worries. I suppose my only my shout out message to everyone is, you know, really, next time you go into a supermarket, just think about, of course, I'm a big advocate for getting the food yourself in the wild, but if you can't do that, guys, do yourself a massive favor and look at the labels and try to get organic food, farmers markets, anything that's come from your local area. You'll be doing the environment a massive favor. And you also will be doing your health and the health of your kids a massive favor. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. And I hope we can all take something away from my show and my message in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. I echo that. And I think we hit on some great, got to know Mario a little better tonight and hit on, man, some great conversation points about food and wild food and food culture and the culture of the world, which I think is great. So I appreciate you sharing all that. And thanks again for making time. Good luck on the hunt tomorrow, starting off.
Thanks, Justin. You're a legend, mate. Easy to talk to.
Appreciate it. Likewise. But for everybody out there, please, you know, make sure you go follow The Man Eats Wild TV over at Instagram. Give Mario and his team a following so you can stay up on all the cool things that he's got going on. Because I peruse the Instagram right now, and it's pretty intense. I like it. So it's good. And as always, thanks everybody for listening. We'll include all the links to show notes, to episodes, social media, all that stuff. Those conversation points we hit on tonight will be in the show notes, which you can see on the podcast platform or over on our website at Harvesting Nature. And then also, too, after you check out Mario's social media, make sure you're following Harvesting Nature. Lots of cool things going on here, cool things to do and see, and we'd love to have you following there, so make sure to do that. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, please punch that 5-star button. Leave us a review. Tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.